Before our next program here on Radio 4, a question. Are you obese? Do you waddle? Are your chins like an Inverness cape? Then hear what Mrs. Mountain has to say.
At the age of 22, I weighed 22 stone, and the first time I sat on a gentleman's knee, he went through the parlour floor and landed in the scullery below, breaking 2 taps, a meat dish, and a valuable embossed egg cup from Weston-super-Mare. It was then that I decided to begin listening to Beachcomber by the Way. And to my delight, the pounds just fell away. Gradually I became a sylph, and only yesterday I sent my dressing gown to the zoo to make an overcoat for an elephant. Thank you. Thank you, Radio 4.
Our pleasure. And now here is today's miracle weight cure. We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humour of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Hello, morons.
Interruptions by John Wells as Prodnose.
Well, takes one to know one.
You bastard.
With the considerable talents of Miss June Whitfield, Mr. John Sessions, Miss Joan Sims, Miss Patricia Routledge, Mr. Simon Greenall, Mr. Brian Bowles, and Miss Henrietta Garden. Beachcomber by the Way.
Good morrow, dimwits. And now a story which includes a lesson for us all. A gentleman with a long brown beard was about to mount his horse to go for a ride. It was a windy day, and as he prepared to vault lightly into the saddle, a gust blew the southern terminus of the beard into the horse's mouth. The horse, suspecting a not unwelcome gift of hay, began to chew. A cry of chagrin and humiliation rent the air. Up ran a groom, and in less time than it takes to break an elephant's leg, he rescued the beard from the maw of the beast, and handed it back to the gentleman, saying as he did so, "Straight from the horse's mouth, sir."
And the lesson in this story?
Ah, yes. The rider rewarded the groom by revealing that the old name for Istanbul was Constantinople. End of lesson. You may go now.
I will.
At last. For those of you who are still with us, a song.
Beardless is the jaguar, and beardless the whale, beardless the kangaroo, and the nightingale. But one thing I will maintain until I burst. No one can say the same of you, my dear Mrs. Hurst.
Coming up in the news after this programme, orangutan kisses plumber, dead fish found in mayor's wardrobe, police detain egg-throwing baronet, and bubbles from meat are invisible, says gas man's daughter. All in the news after this programme. And now back to Beachcomber, by the way.
When we
once more, the question of a new head matron for Narkover School has arisen, the one engaged last term having run off with an auctioneer. The duties include keeping the matrons of the various houses in order and running the sick bay, where boys come with wrists sprained from excessive card playing and migraines from cheap cigars. Applicants for the post include one proposed by the headmaster, Dr. Smart Alec himself, Mademoiselle Renette Portevoix, late of the Breby Mort in the Rue Rogon. The governors, however, are keen to know what qualifications for head matron a 27-year-old Parisian cabaret artist can possibly have. Luckily, forged documents are a sideline of Ratchet, the technical drawing master, and Mademoiselle Portevoix can have whatever qualifications she needs. The governors quieted, the star turn of the Breby Mort night spot was invited for an interview with Smart Alec and several senior masters, eager only to see that the pupil's welfare was being placed first.
Smashing-looking filly, Smart Alec. Better than all those other hatches that applied for the job, right?
Believe me, darling, Mademoiselle Portevoix is even more bewitching in the
flesh. Oh, yeah. And she appears in the artistically posed photographs as part of her most authentic-looking CV. Good work, Ratchet, by the way.
Smarty. And I'll have 200 postcard-sized copies of that photo ready to sell on Monday.
The
sixth form should go crazy for them.
Yes, well, she hasn't got the job yet. All I mean is, let's get the interview over before we count this gorgeous little poolie as hatched.
Little what, headmaster?
Hickson, what is it you teach in your French class?
Find a lady in Adderwatt Wild Motor, says it.
Oh, yes, I... that must be her now. Quiet, everyone. Try not to drool, Rampton.
Entree!
My Parisian princess.
Here you all are. Bonjour, gentlemen. I hope I am not too late. I cannot... Are you sick? Run in these heels.
Howling, stop that. Mademoiselle Portevoir, how lovely it is to see you. How very, very lovely. Yes, enchanté. And what a lovely outfit you are almost wearing. Please, sit down. No, Ratchet, she doesn't want to perch on your lap.
Oh, thank you, Monsieur Smartly.
A cigarette?
Cigar? A pipe? Chewing tobacco?
You are all such sweet, kind gentlemen.
Yes, aren't they? Pack that in. I saw her first. Where was El Portavoir? Just a few questions. Experience have you had of boys?
But plenty, monsieur. I love them all. Even the... Are you sick? Not the ones?
Yes. Oh, hot in here, isn't it? Well, I think we've all seen and heard enough. Any other questions, gentlemen?
What's your phone number?
Any sisters at home?
Yes, what? Yes, all right, thank you. Thank you, Mademoiselle Portevoir. We'll be in touch, I'm sure.
Au revoir, monsieur.
Au revoir.
The masters might rather have been appraising a slave girl in the market of Thoroughly Bad than choosing a dispenser of pills to lazy boys. Mademoiselle Portevoir was accepted unanimously and installed as head matron in her crisp white uniform without delay. Even some of the more red-blooded governors gave their hearty approval. However, it was noticed that the new matron had not been at Narkover for a week before masters and senior boys began to fall ill in suspicious numbers. The invalids discovered that the French girl was a skilful card player, and she was so impartially charming to all that it was a pleasure to lose money to her. Hating to be outwitted, Smart Aleck called an extraordinary meeting of the Narkover masters.
Now, I called all of you here to talk about Mademoiselle Portevoir. Now, look here, you can hold off on that lovey-dovey nonsense. I'm as fond of a prettier face and a pair of legs as anybody. I bought a dozen of Ratchet's postcards myself, but I have a strong suspicion that Matron is making fools of us all. Which of us here has not lost money to her at cards, eh?
Right,
myself included, and I've tried all the tricks I picked up from the foul enough circle.
So what can we do, Smarty?
Well, it's a good question. She's a cunning minx. I've been through her handbag, her luggage, her cupboard.
What about her jewels?
Yes, certainly not. The cash was not to be found. The only way to retrieve all our money is for one of you gooey-eyed fools to marry the creature. Now, who's going to volunteer? Well, come on, one of you.
We've already asked her, Smarty. She turned us down.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Headmaster.
What is it, Magshaw? Can't you see we're in a serious staff meeting?
It's Scutter of the Thick, sir. He just won 146th quid off Matron at poker.
What?
That boy deserves to be head of the school and captain of cricket and football.
It can be for about another 50 quid.
Run along, Mugshaw, run along. So, the mademoiselle does have a weak spot after all.
Careful, Smarty. Perhaps she's just let him win to allay our fears.
Well, possibly. But we have no choice. I shall play cards with her one more time. And in the great tradition of English public schools, I promise to use every dirty trick I know. Gentlemen, clear the room and someone send for Rennet. Do get out. There's a lot of you then blubbering romantic fools.
By the time Mademoiselle Portevoir arrived, Smart Aleck had prepared his own special pack of cards and erected the baize top table with the hidden compartments, made to his own design by Ripper of the woodwork department. Looking more fetching than ever, the siren of the sick bay floated into the headmaster's study on a cloud of sweet musk and seated herself at the card table, her legs crossed to reveal an exquisitely stockinged calf. Smart Alec steeled himself against her charms.
Fight it, Smart, eh? Fight it. She's just trying to break your concentration. Come on, there. Remember what's at stake. Ah, the honour of Narkover, and more to the point, a hefty slice of moolah, the money. Don't forget the money.
Taking his place at the table, Smart Alec faced Renette across the green bays, his special deck between them.
Oh, are we using your pack of cards, Headmaster?
Yeah, with whatever you wish, my dear.
Okay. Oh, and... please, may I have a cigarette?
Oh, certainly. Let me fetch you one from my private supply. The finest Virginia, you know.
As the headmaster turned to pick up the box from his desk, Renette, of course, substituted her own pack of cards for his. However, Smart Alec saw the quick movement reflected in the mirror, fixed over his desk for just that purpose. Desperate to regain the advantage before even a single card was dealt, Smart Alec moved the cigarettes to a side table, and as he did so, contrived to tilt the card table.
Oh, clumsy tonight.
The pack slid off, and in a flash Smart Alec was on the floor. But the cards had scattered, and he only had time to throw his own pack among them before Renette was on the floor to help him.
How strange. There seem to be two packs mixed up here.
Oh, yes. Perhaps there was one pack on the floor already before the other fell.
Oh, perhaps. Please help me up, Headmaster.
As he did so, her slender fingers brushed his sleeve and subtracted a 10 of diamonds, and he deftly retrieved the jack of hearts from the cuff of her matron's tunic.
How on earth does she do it with those short sleeves?
The headmaster asked himself, conscious of a regular arsenal of supplementary cards up his own sleeves, and held in place by a cunning arrangement of elastic in the coat lining.
He is wealthier than he seems.
Mused the matron, who at that moment missed a couple of queens from the top of her stocking.
Shall we start, Headmaster?
I thought we already had started, my dear. Cut for deal.
And so began possibly the strangest and longest card game in history. By sitting at a slight angle to the table, Renette could see her opponent's hand in the mirror above the desk. Smart Alec, having dealt, knew her hand by heart, or so he thought. But while he was picking up her handkerchief for her, he saw that she had substituted some good cards for the bad ones he had given her. To compensate, he removed an ace from her shoe before straightening himself up and hunching his right shoulder so as to obscure his reflection. He was drawing a king from his capacious sleeve when Renette let out a sudden cry.
Where did you get that king? It is mine.
Nonsense, it's been in my sleeve since before we started.
Mais no, I took it from you when we shook hands.
Ah, no, you took its twin, my dear. Oh, how adorable you look when you're angry. My point, I think.
After that, they understood each other better. There was to be no silly pretense of fair play. Sometimes parts of 8 different packs made their appearance. Sometimes one would have a hand of 40 cards, and the other a hand of 3 or 4. And beneath the give and take of the game, human passions boiled.
Why not use that king in your pocket, Smart?
Darling, I will when you use the queen you palmed when you dealt.
And what of the knave of hearts?
He sits before you entranced, ma petite fleur.
The headmaster's resistance to Renette's manifold charms was weakening. As he himself said later, the green baize was but a green sword upon which Cupid seemed to disport themselves, and he began to lose heavily, his eyes too often on her face instead of on her nimble hands. He wondered to himself what kind of scandal it would create if a headmaster had to mortgage his school to pay his card debts. Marriage seemed to be the only way out. He therefore let the cards go hang and began to woo her in earnest.
Your turn, Smarty.
Yes, my little poopsie-woopsie, my little nipsiekin.
You must lay a card, mon chéri.
Oh, if you anything, my fragrant lodestar, my French fancy, ma mademoiselle magnifique.
Oh, you must not say such things. No, no.
The matron was experienced enough to realize that Smart Alec's sudden change of tactics was inspired more by financial difficulties than by her beauty. Therefore, having collected a considerable amount of money at Narkover, and before taking part in this last contest, she had summoned from Paris her ironmonger of a husband, Monsieur Paul Galipet, to protect her from the headmaster's impending infatuation.
Renette, my dear, is there someone else?
Oh, only my husband.
What?
Oui, he is an ironmonger, a big, strong ironmonger.
Ah.
He stay at the Narkover Arms.
Ah.
Come over tomorrow and bring my £2,376.15 with you. Mm. Bonsoir, Headmaster.
Oh, blast. Blast, 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 blast.
Well, Headmaster, how did it go? Radiant, didn't you?
Oh, buzz off, Stringer.
Got too
Next day at the Narkover Arms, Smart Aleck had not talked to Monsieur Gallipet for 5 minutes before a wild idea came into his head. The man was obviously a simpleton. Whilst Renette was upstairs, secretly packing a suitcase for a quick getaway, Smart Aleck hustled the husband into a little room at the back of the hotel and suggested they pass the time with a game of poker.
Ah, poker. I have heard of it, Monsieur Smart Aleck.
You have?
Maybe. A game with the cards, is it not? I am not as good with the cards as my wife.
Rather. Can't hear it. I'll deal, shall I? These red ones are called hearts, you see.
Smart Aleck began to win, hand over fist, spare card under the table. The honour of the school was saved in a game played with the most unorthodox rapidity. By the time Renette came downstairs with her case, Smart Aleck had won back the school debt, and then some.
Mon Dieu!
Hello, Madame Gallipet. Your husband and I have just been having a little fun. Pity you weren't here to join in.
Oh, no, Paul!
Can you give this gentleman a cheque? I fear I leave my book in Paris.
Yes, that's £200 you now owe me. You look dressed to travel, my dear. Not leaving your post without notice, are you? Very naughty.
My husband and I return to Paris tonight. Unless you would rather I stayed and talked freely about last night, eh? Poopsie-whoopsie?
So, what is this, poopsie-whoopsie?
All right, you win. Write out the check and we'll call it quits. Just don't make it out to, my little mipsy kittens.
And so Narkover lost another matron. A French ironmonger got the rough edge of his wife's tongue. And Smart Aleck saved the honour of the school, or at least what little there had been of it to start with. The governors now stipulate that the important post of head matron be filled by a person outside the world of cheap cabarets. To this end, Smart Aleck and several dutiful senior masters are currently believed to be interviewing a number of attractive young film actresses.
Coming up in the news after this programme, washerwoman bites ferret, egg hatched on horseback, niece of peeress fills bucket with sea kale, cheese exercised on chain, and are cows afraid, asks postman. And now back to Beachcomber, by the way.
Not interrupting anything, am I?
Ah, my dear Prudnos, come in. You're just in time for tea.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, it is. Tea being the letter I've now reached in my dictionary for today.
Oh, dear, I knew it was too good to be true.
Silence, bugbear. Take in. Tourists on their way, let us say, from Paris to Madrid in a luxury coach are said to take in the Pyrenees during the trip. Temperance. An intemperate hatred of drink.
Rot.
Thrill. A fatal accident. Time. The word of command used to dismiss people from public houses.
Balderdash.
Tourist. Anybody who is not in your own party abroad.
Drot.
Transition. Period of. When critics are tired of saying the same thing over and over again about a writer, they announce that he is going through a period of transition.
Oh, flim-flam.
Troop. An old military word, now applied to Boy Scouts and Girl Guides.
Tripe.
No, troop. Truth. There are two kinds. One, an old truth, i.e. a stupid, out-of-date superstition. And two, a new truth, i.e. the latest guess of science. And finally,
hooray!
Tudor, the designation of any cottage that has a crazy pavement, painted on beams, and the name in Gothic lettering on the gate. There. Finished. And now, Prodnos, would you care for one lump or two?
I don't suppose you're referring to sugar, are you?
No, I don't suppose I am.
Oh, right then. Goodbye.
There's a lot to be said for the subtle approach. And now to other matters.
Home news. Legal history was made at the Crown Court today when Mr. Justice Cocklecarrot began hearing evidence in what is generally being referred to as the case of the false beard. A number of legal actions have been brought, arising from an incident at the Hotel Gorgeous, where a Mr. Stanley Mulberry managed to get his false beard jammed in the hotel's swing door. The Hotel Gorgeous is suing Beards Limited, who are suing the County Council. Mr. Mulberry, the man who borrowed the false beard in question, is suing the Despard Glue Quarries, who supplied the glue for the beard. Mrs. Tuft Calvalli, who was in the swing door when the beard became caught in it, is suing the Hotel Gorgeous, and a Miss Varge, who laughed at her and tugged the beard clear of the door. A clergyman named Umbold has decided to intervene on humanitarian grounds, and the county council is suing him for intervention. Mr. Honeyweather Gooseboot and Mr. Tinkleberry Snapdriver are representing some of the parties involved, but it is not yet clear exactly which.
Tom Denning was saying that the Irish are actually related to the cat family.
Silence! Silence! Your witness, Mr. Gooseboot.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Mulberry, where were you 6 months before the events in question on Thursday, January the 18th?
Does it matter, Mr. Gooseboot?
Well, I hope to show that this is not the first time this gentleman has had his false beard caught in a swing door.
Oh, very goodness, Gooseboot, chap, isn't it? Right to the point.
Silence, silence! Answer the prosecuting counsel, Mr. Mulberry.
Well, the question, as I understand it...
You are not here to understand questions, but to answer them.
Ah.
Even we members of the legal profession do not always understand the questions. So how can you hope to? I confess I do not know what Mr. Gooseboot is talking about, but you must reply to him.
I will put it another way. On Thursday, January the 18th, 6 months before the events in question, where were you?
My lad, I will not allow my client to be intimidated in this way. Rather than submit to this iniquitous line of questioning, I believe that my client is prepared to settle out of court.
Settle what? Settle what? We have no evidence yet of anything, either for nor against. And there are more than 14 cases being heard here. Couldn't you give us a day or two so we can find out what all this is about?
Oh, very well, my lad.
Subsidiary cases to the so-called case of the false beard began being heard in front of Mr. Justice Cocklecarrot yesterday. Delays are now expected in the hearing of other court cases due to the large number of barristers engaged to deal with the beard ramifications.
On the night of the 18th, Mrs. Webfoot...
One moment, Mr. Coombe Frozet. Which case is this?
It is Morton versus Carr.
Is this the Tackworld case?
No, my lad.
I have no trace of this case. And who is Mrs. Webfoot?
I am!
What are you doing up in the public gallery?
Knitting!
Did you hear that?
There's no law against it, is there?
None that this court would uphold, I sadly suspect.
Interventions by Mrs. Stocking, Pompo Limited, the Upshot Dye Works, Canon Narrable, and Mouse, Escalop, and Fremlingham Limited yesterday delayed the beard case at the Crown Court. Today, Mr. Gooseboot and Mr. Snapdriver QCs are to attempt to establish the exact nature of the beard in question.
The Hotel Gorgeous cannot be expected to employ a man to disengage false beards from swing doors.
Why not?
My learned colleague surely cannot imagine that false beards are the rule at this establishment.
My learned colleague is not entitled to assume that a false beard is an exceptional ornament. Also, a real beard may get caught in a door.
But it wouldn't come off unless shaved off. Of course, my lord.
It might. You're not entitled in law to assume it wouldn't.
Gentlemen, please, what's the use of arguing about a real beard? It is a false beard we have to deal with.
I hope to show, my lad, that it was a real beard.
Silence! People do not send for glue to stick on real beards.
They do when they wish to appear to be wearing a false beard.
Oh, I see. The plaintiff grew a real beard and smeared it with glue, and it came off in the door. Very plausible, I'm sure.
It was a false beard that came off, but it was glued to the real one.
And might one ask why, Mr. Gooseboot?
That, my lad, is what I hope to discover.
Oh, dear.
At the Crown Court yesterday, a representative of a firm of beard makers, Mr. Henry Milkpudding, and Messrs. Nido and Bolgrease, glue factors, were called upon to give evidence. Mr. Constantangent, QC, was attempting to establish whether the accident to the beard might have been caused by inferior glue of a not very adhesive quality. Mr. Emery Paper, QC, and Mr. Valpurgis presented evidence on both sides.
Mr. Paper, surely false beards are not actually glued to the chin.
In this case, yes, my lord.
Then does the owner soak it off every night?
No, my lord, he sleeps in it.
But does the beard fall inside or outside the bedclothes?
Is that material to this case, my lord?
No, Mr. Walpurgis, no. A mere private inquiry. You must allow me a little latitude in a case of this description. Yes, Mr. Gooseford?
Perhaps we could reconstruct the accident with the beard, thus demonstrating once and for all the adhesive qualities, or otherwise, of the glue.
Objection, my lord. If the beard came off too easily, Sir Charles here might claim it was a bad advertisement for their beard glue.
We are not here, Mr. Snapdriver, to advertise glue, believe it or not.
In that case, I'd like to call Mrs. Stocking.
Why?
My lad, she is suing the Ormsby Lodge Fitter Company.
And what is this to do with the beard incident?
Me lad?
Mr. Trenton?
Me lad, I can explain. The beard was sent to the laundry 3 days before it was caught in the swing door. It was brought by mistake to Commander Pembroke's house in a wheelbarrow, as there was a shortage of vans. The commander is currently in the South China Sea.
Excellent. In the absence of the commander, we can adjourn the case, can we not?
The beard case ended yesterday with dramatic suddenness, information having been lodged by a common informer, who maintained that under an act of Edward the Confessor, a false beard was the responsibility of the owner, who could seek no redress at law for an accident to it. The appeal was allowed, and before Mr. Justice Cocklecarrot could sum up, the jury, barristers, solicitors, clerks, ushers, and other officials had rushed from the court.
Glad that's over. Come in. Yes, my little red-bearded fellow.
My name is Lois Rosenchimney, a dwarf of no fixed address, and I have evidence vital to the reopening of the beard case.
Oh, no.
So, what do you think of the matter then, Gov?
Frankly, not much. I've come all the way across town to waste my time looking at a near wreck. You told me on the phone it had only one careful owner.
That's right, Gov. The other six didn't look after it at all.
And now, as a special favour to my listeners...
Oh, you're finishing early today, are you?
Button your lip, meddler, or I shall soil my boot upon your worthless frame.
Charming.
Yes, I can be when I wish to be, and right now I do not.
Well, get on with it, then.
Thank you. As a special favour to my esteemed listeners, I now open up the airways to a number of their filthy little personal advertisements. I offer no guarantee as to their validity, nor any compensation for any troubles arising out of them. You're on your own, as the Indian said to General Custer.
No, he didn't.
Oh, shut up.
Anglo-Indian, retired, gives elocution lessons to parrots. Budgerigars considered.
Gentleman, son of lady and gentleman, seeks employment of a gentlemanly nature with lady or gentleman, or lady and gentleman.
Dearest, do you remember Southall Gasworks? I have not forgotten. H.L.
Fishmonger, 29, unmarried, would like to meet girl used to fill it in place for quiet chat.
Bootlace says for dog's hands woven. Apply the dog's hands woven bootlace shop, Trevor Square.
Will the old sailor who looked through the vacuum flask and cried, a sail, communicate with Miss Olga Reeves, Tredich Manor, Gorse Hill?
Would the gentleman who left a fried egg as a bookmark in Byron's Poems, page 84, at the Westbrook Public Library last week, communicate with Finder?
Gentleman who can see almost any day large red mice in tartan trousers skating round his bed on bubbling asphalt desires psychological treatment.
No doubt, though a cat might be all that is really needed. More advertisements next time. Until next week, goodbye.
That was Beachcomber by the Way, adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. John Wells, June Whitfield, John Sessions, Joan Sims, Patricia Routledge, Simon Greenall, Brian Bowles, and Henrietta Garden played the other characters. Your announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson.